Claire runs with her hut, with her companion, our children's home out in the 40 acres out of the old cane in Mendon Valley. Don is a school teacher in the valley. And Terry asks questions of people on the street from there. She gets paid for it too.
She gets to get up early.
No, my schedule's being changed tomorrow.
So what is it? Are you going to give me some sleep?
8 o'clock in the morning.
Wow, that's
good. I used to do an early morning news show, but now I'm just doing morning. I just sat on the street all day long.
That's nice.
I'm on the street.
I'm a reporter.
Mm-hmm. There's that much going on in your pie to warrant having you out on the street all day long?
Archie's a contractor and runs a restaurant. And has been with Tim for how long, Archie? 20 years.
Wow.
Archie's an associate minister.
Another one of our children.
This is Muggs and this is Joyce.
Hello.
This is Mary and Ed.
Muggs go wherever Joyce goes.
Have you met their children?
Turn around so we can see. Jack, look.
Look, Jen.
Yeah,
kitten,
that's
a beautiful
It's Muggs.
He's tired. Oh,
aren't we just like a human?
Aren't we glad Muggs is sleeping? We're so glad.
Thank you, Muggs.
We appreciate that, Muggs.
Oh, God.
Oh, they met Mr. Muggs.
This is Florine. That she's one of the little girls.
Chatting about the church, and he wanted to know what he should do in order to come to a service, and I tried to explain that we weren't really typical in the sense that we weren't really concerned so much about numbers as we were about quality of commitment. And I did explain some of the things about metaphysics and about the fact that we're very much concerned about social justice and the fact that take seriously our membership here because it's our whole life. And then subsequent to that, I think it was last week, Ed called and asked if I could meet with Mary and him. So we met for 3 hours for lunch at the something else.
You were counting time.
Pardon me?
No.
And I tried to be very candid. It'll probably come out how Canada was. But I thought sure that they would be scared away, but they're here. And
did it take more than that?
And so, for those of you who might not know background, Ed has been in Ukiah for a year as staff attorney with the OEO, and he comes from Southern California. Mary, you come from back east, right?
Minneapolis.
Maybe we can begin by asking you why you're interested in us.
I think that, as far as I'm concerned, the way you described the whole church, the thing that appealed to me the most was the sense of community that you were describing, as well as the sense of purpose, the sense of dedication. There isn't much of that around anymore. That's really why what appealed to me the most. The three things.
You speak up a little.
Yeah, the sense of community. I think was the first thing.
That's going to be a problem too.
That seems to be lacking everywhere else.
Would you like to sit here?
No. This is fine. I'm going to take them over to bed. No.
And then tremendous sense of purpose that everybody seems to have, didn't you, according to your description? Those are my thoughts. I have a strong feeling that I would have a difficult time in this church because I don't share the political view that you seem to describe. That is, I don't disagree with that, I just don't have it. I'm sort of apolitical, as I explained to you. At one time I was very strong. I felt very strongly.
What dissuaded you?
Pardon me?
What dissuaded you?
It wasn't a matter of dissuasion. I think it was just sort of a gradual going away from it. I was very interested in the Kennedys and their first moving up in power, and also the black movement starting with Martin Luther King back in the late 50s. I went to some of the rallies at the Herald and so on. But then I got the feeling that, well, black people, I didn't feel a part of the black struggle because I wasn't black. Mm-hmm. I felt that a little bit silly being there at the rallies. You know, I just didn't feel like it was my struggle. Not that I felt alienated from it at all. It was just that, I don't know, I didn't feel a part of it. So I just threw away the
race. Well, race, of course, is not our main purpose. Everything, though, it seems to me, boils down in the to a political issue. We are very anti-capitalist. You'd be most unhappy with our environment. We wish we were not. We would love to become anything short of that. Perhaps existentialism would be the only thing short of that. Because if you're one leaves this purpose in this world, it seems to me that you can't get away from the political aspects. So there are undertones and overtones of politics all the time in our ranks. We do the race, too. It's not the issue. It's a class struggle. And we believe this strongly. From the time the blacks were brought here, it was a class problem. Racism is just an effect of capital using people. The blacks happen to be one of the most obviously used, and they're more easily repressed as a group because of color and the cultural background, particularly color, just the obviousness of their pigmentation. Mm-hmm. But we feel very strongly about this capital just used by people, and in order to justify using them, if we paid the black people what they would owe them from slave times alone, they would be the richest people in this country. And so we feel racism is the rationale that developed to justify economic exploitation. We've unfortunately been cursed with the actual experience of being in socialist countries, having short and longer experiences. And once conscience is exposed to what's happening in the world, it's very, very difficult. We also know what we're going to pay for this. This knowledge is going to be costly. Seeing the Chronicles today, paper yesterday, describing what happened at Wounded Knee, and we know what happened at Wounded Knee because we have direct insights. Saying that they killed animals and brutalized and destroyed property and did away with artifacts. The terrible thing that is happening in this stage of capitalism, which even the press, as much as Nixon even wanted to further restrict it, it isn't really free at all when it comes to this issue of politics. Anytime someone begins to demand egalitarianism and demand their rights and their and due process, and if it borders into the political arena at all, and Angela Davis was involved in Wounded Knee, they portray everything just as ugly as they can. That is probably the greatest testimony of our character that we would even tell you that. But as much as we appreciate the paranormal, we believe it comes still from the sociological and political consciousness. We believe in the dialectic. We believe in this historical process that man evolves in every facet of his life, from Marxian same concepts, and we hold them dearly, and we will die for them. We prepare to die for them. We know that we will probably die for them.
So?
We will get our youth out to some areas. We're not going to sit as the Jews did and feel, you know, that things are going to get better, and are that we're God's chosen people. We don't think of those frames of reference. So we have made some efforts, and we have missionary contacts, an amazing amount of respect from a cross-section of people, because we carry our politics, I think, maybe less noisily than some. We feel, and in our own character, we feel that Marxism, socialism is at stake, and so we try very hard to subdue any other sensual or selfish patterns to that great process. But we've seen some socialists working out their own aggression, which is a normal problem. I mean, it's something to be expected in this aggressive, alienated society. But we, I think, for that reason, have, by being very careful Marxists, we have won the respect of a lot of people. It will be easier for some groups to be put out than us. I think it will be quite a fire when they decide to come after us. But I think undoubtedly history has shown us enough patterns that is the case. Being Batista, which was upheld and supported and actually imposed by American interests in Cuba, United Fruit Company, having seen what happened there and its decline firsthand, my wife and I went into Cuba and took young women out of houses of prostitution owned by Americans, operated by Americans, owned by the churches. Protestant, one of them, Assembly of God Church, the Fundamentalist Church of Springfield, Missouri, to think of one, but a numerous host of churches and American businessmen that conscripted young girls, 9 to 12 years of age. We took 16 out, but from 9 to 12 years of age, we just broke into the place, really, and used our bluff and got these youngsters out. They were involved in just a form of a class slavery. They had these youngsters, they'd bring them in, and they'd say they were hungry. They came from the interior, there was starvation under Batista. And they'd come to the cities trying to find some way to keep their families alive. These American entrepreneurs would say, well, come on, we'll give you a job as a waitress. They'd get them in, they wouldn't pay them. And so they'd take their morale down until they had no sustenance. And then they'd say, I'll feed you if you do certain things. And then from that point on, we'll send money to your people, and the pittance. I think $10 was all that they gave them totally, which if they got none of this, this was when they finally groomed themselves fully in prostitution, they would send $10 to their families in the interior, because our church took it on, and we took on $12.50 for the first group, $15. And they were so overwhelmed and overjoyed by this that they just quite clung to us to get out. And we really had to hold them to get out with them. It was that kind of terrible misery. So I hate capitalism. I hate everything it does to people. It alienates people. The sense of community you see is only and solely responsible to socialism. There's nothing else responsible.
True.
And it is a sense of community. It's a sense of sharing that is glorious. It's paradisical. It's utopian to the world. They say it can't be. Our money is interchanged. We trust each other. We have gone to bat for each other through thick and thin, hell on high water, and a whole lot of others too. We have a commitment to everyone within our group to show that socialism works. So if it's even a loved one of our members, it's being in the courts. We go, and we 99% of the time gotten them out, because you know who speaks the loudest, it's who makes the most noise, and who sticks together in society. I saw something interesting that was brought out by Time magazine a few weeks ago. That any group, if any people wish to survive in America, now Time said, and I forgot which context it said, you have to belong to a strong church or some strong organization. You've got to be a part of a very strong group if you really want the best of America. Well, that's the unfortunate, damnable truth. You'll be taken advantage of down through life, and even white, because you're not, you're in the class struggle, whether you recognize it or not. People consider themselves capitalists who have no more chance of becoming a capitalist. No one could become a capitalist today. Monopoly of capitalism looms inside. Free enterprise is gone. You hear so much talk of free enterprise. The little businessman can't succeed. We have all kinds of cases in our church where it hadn't been for our sustain, and they've been gone. more and more you see, what am I trying to say, such as markets.
Small businesses go out.
What do you call these big supermarkets and mm-hmm. chains and small capitalists. When you get down to the small number of families that run, control this nation and control, unfortunately, 60-some% of the land area and resources of the world. And the annoying one, if you travel to see what we do to people, you know, we don't even mind degrading them morally, we starve them to death. I saw it in Brazil. I saw it in British Guyana. I've seen it all through Latin America and all my travels. Every place we put our ugly foot, capitalism exploits. And in South Africa right now, the tracking station at Pretoria is being used by the secret police in South Africa to spy conspiratorially to keep the black population subdued. Freely, we give our trust to the African Department of South Africa for the worst kind of racism and cannot get out of their city block after 6 o'clock at night. America is vicious and America is vile, and I feel unclean living in America. I feel unclean the fact that we don't go on a total protest by not paying a dime of our taxes. I would like the confrontation. I would like very much for them to destroy me, because I know I'm compromising to be alive. There's no possible way you can stay alive in this system unless you make compromises. Or now I think we've gone beyond that point. We've become a little bit more of a threat and haven't made enough compromises, but we represent 10,000 people. And it's not easy to destroy 10,000 people. You know, you have to do some planning to get that done. But from the thing of kin solving to every episode, here, I don't know, I think we mentioned to your man who I was disappointed to see come. I don't know what kind of man. I wanted you to be the president of the legal services. But whoever, I talked to him about the kin solving episode, conspiring with the local operators. On Tuesday, getting a complete report. We had the operators, we had the logs. His telephone was monitored till we knew it beyond a shadow of a doubt. Jewish attorney over here, shaking, you probably met him already. Personal telephone calls that we knew absolutely hadn't been discussed with anyone. And this young woman, fearful of her job, fearful of what community pressures were, but something of a little morality left in her. She didn't like what was going on all around her. At least supervisor and two telephone assistants here, plus some others, but three major ones that were monitoring us on their job, listening to us, and then the reporter conspiring with us and taking the information every Tuesday. A crime. We couldn't do much about it. The telephone company wanted to water it down, but we could have still proved our case if we'd wanted to throw the young woman to the wolves. But even the telephone company had to admit, yeah, if she gives testimony, we might be forced to have to place her in some other department because the hate is so great. And the hate is great in this town and in every little hamlet and village. Racism is so intense that a few hours ago they tore into our concession stand in Anton Park and just essentially destroyed pop and property and threw ketchup all over the walls and wrote those ugly terms that we of learning to know is everywhere in America. The racism that's created and fed by the society. Nixon and his poverty program, cutting funds from blacks and giving grants to Mexicans. Division that goes on in every facet of our society. The new black movies that show in One-Eyed Charlie, a black man fighting with Mexicans, and then the Mexicans stoning him to death by blow, and the blood oozes out before the audience. Everything done in this country with a passion, a plan, so that the working people will not get together, so that minority ethnic groups won't get together. And I happen to have the privilege or the disgusting experience of sitting in the environment where there were both Mexicans and blacks, and even having them talk about the tensions they felt towards each other after a simple movie, where an Uncle Tom played the part for $6,000 and some special interest white groups made $33 million off of One-Eyed Charlie. And they set up images for the black, if you've seen some of these films, Superfly and Mac, one's the hero is the pimp, the other's the hero is a pusher. And the youngsters now, then the market, the clothes market, follows right along, like through Fillmore and up and down, all the Superfly line. What a conspiracy against people. They can't find their way, because at least youngster, white youngster, you can identify with Tarzan. But the movies now that are being exposed with blacks involved in them, the black economy doesn't get anything from it, and the images are grotesque. Again, creating a kind of a criminal class to support drugs, which even KGO announced in its editorial that they'd had evidence that we were involved in the CIA was transporting drugs to uphold the Cambodian government. Well, those are realities, man, and we can't get away from them. Leftist realities might be subjective, but when KGO says CIA is involved in the heroin traffic and the American public listens to it and doesn't do anything about it, what kind of a mentality? What kind of a mentality? We all heard it, and many heard it, and I heard many remarks about it. So what? But this is what's happening to America. And every place, when you boil it down, you come up to the one thing, capital. Capital versus a form of community. Form of communalism, socialism. But if you just say community or communalism, you tend to not have a philosophical basis for it. And Marx's prophecies, for the most part, as much as I can analyze them, have come to pass. He didn't declare himself to be a prophet, but how monopoly capitalism, how we would maintain our death throes with deficit spending and some compromised social legislation, such as Social Security and the graduate income tax. He's been pretty damned accurate. And I wish I could get him out of my head, because it's going to mean the death of my loved ones. I don't mind dying anymore, whatever fear I used to have to go on if I ever did have it. But I don't like what it means to oppose a viciousness like this, because I saw it in Batista's Cuba. I saw what young people had to undergo. They had their gonads. They had to cut them off themselves and eat them. Mm-hmm. And then if they would go down, they were revived. And I saw the pictures of it. I saw the mothers whose sons had to go through it. And then I saw Cuba just a year afterwards, when the houses of prostitution had been closed. When now today, telephone services are free. Rent is free. There's a family sense that money's not even needed. The barrier of money, the barrier of class is gone. A solidarity that's come in spite of an economic boycott. A sensitivity that, beyond anything I ever saw. I met Castro, and I didn't want to meet him. All of my reaction was, don't let me see him, but I saw him. And wants to see him is to love him, because he was a man of the people. Came up when Trujillo was ready to kill him, and Americans were paying the pirates to Eisenhower said they were pirates. When my wife and I fell in the ditch, we saw American planes, and when one crashed at a sugar refinery in Cromway, it was an American captain. Unfortunately, the captain was white and his underling was black. We saw the identification. It looked very much American to us, and the sugarcane fields were going up in smoke. And yet the Mexican people didn't give over to hate, meaning me, at that time, sort of an idealist, without at least a kind of an apolitical stance. They just came up and said, please, missionary, tell America what their government's doing, what your government's doing now. And as I said, you see Castro walk in spite of those bombs, in spite of the threats, to walk into a center, urban center, driving his own car after being out on the fields for 2 days, working grimy with the dirt and the sweat of his people. No bodyguards, no bullet shields, no plastic, you know, bulletproof windows. Nixon can't even get out on a platform today because the oppressors are so hated, and there's such alienation and such violence in our society. But the man who walked through his people, and then he walked up to me, he said, missionary. He looked back at him. He said, if you wish to help, he said to our group, there were several of us, different denominations. He said, if you want to put Jesus Christ's teachings into practice, if you want to feed the hungry, clothe the naked, he said, we'll give you land. He said, if you want to come down here and sell Gideon Bibles and establish prostitution again, I'm afraid the day is finished. But he still was so courteous, he offered me and Elam Assemblies, a fundamentalist church, land because he liked our practical program. Albert's plan to do it. That was in the early stage of revolution because they really needed help. They were setting educational groups up under trees and making tents and hospitals. In one 6 months, 12 hospitals had been built. They said that the doctors were all leaving Cuba. Well, it's amazing if they've all left, because a team of 120 medical doctors went to Peru and gave him some help just recently, and some of the best surgeons in the world saved the Peruvian president's life. A lot of Cubans are not leaving. All I've been able to see that's left, and I've met a lot of them, are people who had their hand in the till under Batista, or who were apathetic and enjoyed materialistic luxuries. Naturally, if you enjoyed that so much of it, you wouldn't be too happy in Cuba. Although it might be good for you to read Harper's April 3, where it's an indictment against Cuba, and see how he's treated people who did wish to stay, middle class of people, typical DAR type, who didn't want to uproot herself because she'd been in Cuba all of her life, but didn't like, you know, this, that, and the other, and was free to discuss this. But the only, and she even had some of her servants still remained in her house, a better standard of living, you had to pay them better. The only criteria was that she would not be able to pass this house on to others, you know. He didn't try to traumatize her life by changing her lifestyle, but you can't pass it on. The same so is China, according to our right-wing literature. Even conservatives, Time magazine said this has happened with the industrialists of China. I don't know where I have it, but I have a column from the Time magazine that said that never an industrialist was killed in China. That's what Time said. They had been sent to educational centers and retrained, and I don't know how many, but it was an amazing number, 60 or 70% who could come back and become the people's managers. Manage those same factories that they had built, and through opportunism own are the legacies of ancestry that had been handed down for years and years and generations. So we are socialists, and I think that the fair thing, the dangerous thing to say, but this time we're probably so monitored that we are not taking all that much danger, because people, we have found that the plants that they send are amazingly nice sometimes, you know, very sensitive and very warm. Some are very hippish, talk right on the peace question, on the race question. We've run into it. We had a youngster here who fled from his family, who's CIA, big gentleman, big executive in the CIA. He happened to be in Nigeria when he woke up one night to his cruel awakening, and heard his father discussing with some of his friends. He didn't know his father was in CIA until then. He sat on the stairs and heard them discuss the planning of the Biafran conflict for oil and so forth, a lot of other ramifications. I'm simplifying it. And so 3 million people were murdered by the plan of the CIA. He heard it, or one spotted him. His dad informed him, if you were to speak about this, you might, suggesting to a 17-year-old boy, you might not live. Well, it scared the wits out of the kid. He ran off, came across half the United States and half the world. He got here in a terribly disarray. His personality was degenerated because of drugs. He was having some memory lapse. We took him in, got him back into school, and I was making very good grades and planning toward a medical degree. But the interesting thing was he never made contact.